knew what a girl was up against. Happily, over the last decade, feminist literary scholars have done much to recover Luce's work, and this fine new edition of Blondes, brought out by the novel's original publisher, goes far in awarding it deserved eminence in our collective cultural history. In Luce's prefatory essay, The Biography of a Book, she claims that Gentlemen Prefer Blondes was begun as a brief sketch on a train in response to the inordinate attention that a blonde sitting nearby was given by fellow male travelers, while she was all but ignored. Knowing that her pal, H.L. Mencken, had a similar weakness for peroxide, she sent him the story, which he admired, but declined to print in the American Mercury. "Little girl," he wrote to Luce, "you're making fun of sex, and that's never been done before in the USA. I suggest you send it to Harper's Bazaar, where it'll be lost among the ads and won't offend anybody." Henry Sell, editor of what was then called Harper's Bazaar, a repository of fashion, pleasure, and instruction, was eager to publish Luce's story and, wanting to serialize it, insisted she continue the chronicle of Lorelei's quest to improve her mind and her ambition to reform her friend and foil Dorothy as they traveled to London, Paris, the Eiffel Tower is divine, Vienna, Budapest, and back home to New York. Lorelei's, and by extension, Dorothy's, education is funded by Daddy-in-Chief Gus Eisman, king of the button business. Lorelei, too savvy to rely on just one income source, supplements her stock by procuring jewelry from various admirers along the way. Though she much appreciates European gallantry, in the end, American values prevail. "I mean, a girl has to look out in Paris, or she would have such a good time in Paris that she would not get anywheres. So I really think that American gentlemen are the best after all, because kissing your hand may make you feel very, very good, but a diamond and sapphire bracelet lasts forever." The book, in its entirety, was published by Boni and Livright, renowned for their modernist authors. In that same year, 1925, they published works by Dreiser, Hemingway, Faulkner, Eliot, and Pound. The first printing, a modest 1,200 copies, was followed within 2 weeks by a second of 20,000, succeeded by many more reprints. Over the next quarter century, the book would continue to sell well and was adapted into a play, a silent film, now lost, a musical, a comic strip, a dress fabric, and a wallpaper. The 1953 release of the screen version, starring Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell, eclipsed the book thereafter. Luce began her career writing scenarios for silent films. Born in 1889 in Sison, California, today Mount Shasta, Corrine Anita Luce had a strict mother and a philandering father. A newspaper editor with wanderlust, her father moved the family around California towns, opening and shutting local publications a few times a year, but his true ambition was to become involved in theater production. To that end, he landed Anita, age 6, a part in a stock company's stage version of Quo Vadis. That same year, she won a limerick contest in a children's magazine, and her desire to write was ignited. She continued her acting career until she graduated from high school when, realizing she preferred the pen to the spotlight, she set out to become a writer. Eventually, she got herself a job writing for Biograph, a film production and exhibition company. Luce wrote hundreds of scenarios and intertitles during the silent film era, ultimately becoming one